I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
Hey, welcome to Bird Calls, everybody. Thanks for being with us here on 1490 WGCH. We're here every Sunday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon, and also a new time. They're rerunning it here on the station Mondays from 8 to 9. So if there's a week you can't make the Sunday, then try us on Monday night. That's a couple ways to get it. And then another way, obviously, is through Listen Live at birdcallsradio.com. And if you still can't make any of those, then at your leisure, check out birdcallsradio.com and check out the archives. So this is Bird Calls Radio, and every week we talk about wild birds, the great, wonderful world of wild birds in your backyard, in the field, out on the water, all over the place. So it's all fun to look at these birds and help protect the birds. And that's going to be a little theme of this week, is protecting the birds. One of our guests is going to be Terry Backer. He's the soundkeeper for Long Island Sound. He's also a state rep on the environmental committee for a state rep for the state of Connecticut. A long time and popular member of the state house. So Terry Backer will be with us in a little bit. And Joe Warren will be with us a little bit. He's owns Wild Birds Unlimited, one of the sponsors of the show. And, maybe Joe will talk about what we can do to help birds in the backyard, too. So I was, I also work for a newspaper. I work for the Hour newspaper in Norwalk, Connecticut. And I write a bird watching column there. So lots of news comes across my desk. And, of course, the news about birds always piques my interest. So this goes back a little bit to the end of March. The American Bird Conservancy sent the release on, migrating birds arriving early. Now, we've talked about that on Bird Calls Radio before, so that's not necessarily the most newsworthy part of this, but they were saying its dateline was March 26 in Washington, D.C., and they say they're already seeing birds such as the blue-gray gnatcatcher, Louisiana water thrush, and a couple different types of swallows and phoebes. And, we talked about the phoebes arriving early. And March 24th, which was a Saturday, I actually had a Louisiana water thrush in a local park. So that was interesting to see, certainly early for that. March 24th, you'd think that would be a little later, even though the Louisiana water thrush is the one that arrives a little bit before its cousin, the northern water thrush. So that was interesting. So there's no doubt that the mild winter has made for a little earlier migration for a lot of our bird species. But then this release from the American Bird Conservancy goes on to offer top 10 tips for protecting birds. And I like top 10 lists, and I like tips, and obviously I like birds, so that I figured I would share these with you. I've gone over these from time to time with different guests, and last summer I think I even had a whole show devoted to protecting birds and what little simple things that you can do, but certainly worth repeating if we're talking about helping out our bird species. So here we go. Number 10, according to the American Bird Conservancy, ways to protect birds. Number 10. Learn more about birds and support important conservation work. In other words, join a bird conservation group. That's certainly a good tip. I'm a member of the Darien Land Trust board, so I'm getting involved with protecting some land. In fact, where I saw that Louisiana water thrush was on Darien Land Trust property. So without groups such as land trusts and other conservation organizations, the birds would have a lot harder time, because a lot of the woods that we see would be houses or condos. So, and that's not good bird habitat for a lot of our birds. So, to keep the woods open is always a good thing. So support them. Also, of course, I mentioned Terry Backer will be a guest coming on, and he's a member. Well, he is the soundkeeper That's a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to, keeping Long Island Sound clean for not only for birds, but for all species, including humans. You know, we need clean water too. So that's another good conservation organization, and we'll talk to Terry a little later on in the show. Number 9, keep backyard feeders and bird baths clean to avoid disease. This, of course, they're talking about disease for the birds, not for you or I, although, you never know what you can get if your bird feeders get too dirty. But they're talking about avoid disease for the birds. House finches, of course, are one of the most common birds that would get some sort of disease. They get conjunctivitis if the bird feeders get too dirty. And they suggest in bird baths, replace the water every other day to prevent mosquito breeding. So it's, as we mentioned, the mild winter brought the birds back early. The mild winter is probably also going to mean more bugs and mosquitoes and ticks this year. So we got to be careful with that too. So keep them clean. It's not always the most easy thing or fun thing to do is go out and clean your feeders and bird baths, but it is important. So just take a couple minutes to do that every once in a while. And Joe Warren will be on a little bit later. Maybe he'll give us some tips on how to make the chore not as much of a chore. Number 8 is, where possible, buy organic food to help increase the market for produce grown without the use of pesticides. Pesticides, of course, are a big enemy of birds and insects, obviously. That's why they are pesticides. But that's, they're, a lot of those chemicals are harmful to birds. They not only do they kill the insects that the birds need to eat, but they also, can infect the insects and then make the birds sick, or just being out in the environment is not good for the birds either. So where you can, buy organic food. Number 7 is, reduce your carbon footprint. Use a hand pushed or electric mower, carpool, or use low energy bulbs and Energy Star appliances. Of course, not everyone's going to be using a hand pushed mower, although I've seen more and more of them, and why not get a little exercise besides, make you do a little bit of the work instead of the lawnmower doing all the work all the time. So, and there's some other ways to reduce your carbon footprint. That's always a good idea. Number 6, you could also donate old birdwatching equipment such as binoculars or spotting scopes to local birdwatching groups. If you have some old binoculars or scopes or anything bird-related lying around, especially in other countries where they don't have a lot of money, it's very important to get those folks in other countries involved with bird watching as well. A migrating bird that's here in May and, goes up north or even spends a summer with us, they're down south in the winter, so it's just as important for them to be protected and love down there as it is when they're with us. So if you just Google donate birdwatching equipment, I'm sure you'll be able to find a good organization that will take care of it. Number 5 is, create backyard habitat. If you have a larger yard, create a diverse landscape with native grasses and flowers that attract birds. Obviously bird baths and feeders help as well. So create a good backyard habitat. I'm sure Joe Warren will have something to say about that one, since that's his specialty at his store there. Number 4 is, drink shade-grown coffee. There's a couple of different varieties now. Birds and Beans is, a supporter of the show, so that's just one of the many types out there. There's you want to look for the coffee that's certified as shade-grown. Otherwise, they take these massive plots of, huge acres down in South America and just take down all the trees so the coffee grows quicker. So that's not the best way to do it for the birds, because it's taking all their homes away just so we can have some cheap coffee. So, drink shade-grown coffee. As we mentioned, the winter grounds for the birds are just as important as the summer. So that's one way to help protect the winter grounds for them down in South America and Central America. Kind of going with one with the number 8, which was the organic food. Number 3 is eliminate pesticides from your yard. So I'm sure there's plenty of organic choices to try to, you know, to keep your yard looking nice. So try to move towards that direction instead of putting some harmful chemicals on your yard, which is going to end up in the in our waterways anyway. And I'm sure Terry Backer will have more to say about that a little later. It also says avoid the use of rat poisons that can kill hawks and other birds that feed on the rodents. Yeah, if you have rat poison out there and a rat eats it, it's going to stagger around and become easy prey for the hawks. And, you know, all of a sudden you've just poisoned a hawk as well as that rat, too. So try to come up with some other method of rat control. Number 2, prevent birds from hitting your window. Now, of course, American Bird Conservancy is going to pitch their own product, ABC Bird Tape, but I'm sure there's other products out there. Wild Birds Unlimited probably has something you could put on the outside of your window. The key here is to use put it on the outside of your window, not the inside of your window. They can't see it on the inside. And we've talked about this in some other Bird Calls radio shows with some other guests, but if you put something inside your house to break up the reflection, it's not going to work because the birds can't see in anyway. So you got to somehow break up the reflection from the outside. And number 1 is keep your cat indoors. This is the best. They suggest it's best for your cat as well as the birds. So we've certainly talked about this with some of our guests on Bird Calls Radio to keep cats indoors, how important that is. You know, the number is staggering, the amount of bird deaths caused by free-roaming cats out there. One sentence here in this release says, cats are not native to the U.S. and are responsible for hundreds of millions of bird deaths each year. And, you know, sounds like a large amount of number, and you wonder where they come up with that figure, but I, you know, I have no reason to doubt it. So I know cats, you know, a lot of owners think they, well, cats want to be outside, and that's where they have the most fun, but well, they're killing birds, and they're also putting themselves in danger. So there's your top 10 list. And just another quick study that also came from American Bird Conservancy, a little release they sent out. It says, studies show outdoor cats are popular prey for coyotes. Now, coyotes are expanding their range, and they're even moving into cities such as New York and Boston and, you know, all throughout the U.S. Coyotes are kind of expanding their range. I know where I am in Connecticut, a lot of the larger towns and cities and even the suburbs are, you know, having a lot of trouble with coyotes. So, but they're out there and they want to eat. And according to a study, which is published in the spring edition of the Wildlife Professional, outdoor cats consist of, well, a coyote's diet can consist up to 13%. Of a coyote's diet can be outdoor cats. So they're somewhat easy prey for, you know, these coyotes who are hungry and moving around looking for food. So not only is keeping your cat indoors good for the cats, also good for the birds. So, you know, just something to consider. And, of course, a lot of these birds that we have been talking about and ways to protect them are right here in our own backyard. So since we're bird calls, let's do a quick little bird song here. I'm not going to tell you the answer yet, but I'll play it and then we'll tell you. But it's a common backyard bird. See if you know what this one is. That one, of course, is the tufted titmouse. That's repeats Peter, Peter, Peter over and over. They're, you know, sometimes they get up early and start singing it, and sometimes they let you sleep in a little bit. But when you hear those loud, clear whistles that sound like Peter, 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 that is the tufted titmouse. So let's, there's your top 10 list for protecting birds and a little tufted titmouse music. Let's bring on Let's bring on, as we do every week, let's bring on Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited. He's got a store in Darien, Connecticut, and also Bedford Hills, New York. So Joe's full of backyard birding knowledge. So let's bring Joe on now. And here is Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing pretty good, Chris. How you doing today?
All right. I'm doing fine, thanks. We were talking about how to protect birds, and number two on the list was window strikes, and I'm sure you have some advice on how we can avoid that. What are some tips?
Yeah, window strikes are fairly common, and there's a couple of reasons why they occur, and it's important to know why they occur in order to understand how to prevent them from occurring. First of all, we get window strikes because birds just don't see the window. They don't understand glass. They don't know what it is. So they don't see it. And they think if there are windows in a corner where you can see right through from one window to another, the bird thinks that's just a clear path to get to where they want to go, and that causes them to run into the window. The other thing that happens is birds see reflections in windows. And they'll either see a reflection of a branch, a tree branch, that they want to land on. Mm. And they don't realize that it's not a real tree branch, it's just the reflection, and it causes them to bounce into the window. The other thing they will very often see in a window, and this happens when you see the same bird banging into the same window time and time and time again, it's because they see their own reflection in the window, and they think it's another bird trying to invade their territory, and they want to scare that bird away. And unfortunately, they're very successful because every time they slam into that window in an effort to fly at the other bird, that other bird falls away. And again, they don't understand that it's their own reflection that they're banging into.
Okay.
So to stop all these types of things, you need to find a way to make the window appear solid, to have something that the bird can see that doesn't obstruct your view of the window. Now, fortunately, birds see in a very different spectrum than we do. So you can put decals on your windows that look, for all intents and purposes, like slightly frosted glass to the human eye, but look like a solid object to the bird. And that prevents them from seeing reflections in the window or from seeing through the window, and will stop most bird strikes. The important thing to keep in mind when you're using this type of a mechanism is to put the decal on the outside of the window.
Okay.
Most windows today are thermal pane. That is, they're two pieces of glass with air in between. And if you put the decal on the inside of the window, the bird will still see the reflection on the outside pane of glass. So you want to put the decal on the outside of the window.
All right.
And that'll stop them from banging into the window.
All right. You've addressed this before, but it certainly is worth repeating. What's the best place to position a bird feeder so we're not hurting those birds that we're feeding?
Bird feeders. The danger zone is between 4 feet and 10 feet. If your feeders are closer than 4 feet to the building or to the where the windows are, and if they're right up on the window, like a window feeder itself, the birds have slowed down enough in an effort to get to where the food is that they're not likely to run into the window. If it's more than 10 feet away, they have plenty of maneuvering room to avoid the window. It's that 10-foot to 4-foot range that's the danger zone. They're moving too fast when they're heading toward the feeder, and they don't have enough maneuvering room to slow down before they bang into the window, which they don't even know is there. They can't sense it. So if you're going to put feeders close to your house and close to the windows, you either want them 4 feet or closer or 10 feet or farther away. Avoid that 10 to 4-foot range to minimize window strikes as much as possible.
All right. All right. Well, good advice as always, Joe. Tell us where to find you, and I hear you might have a gift for some people who mentioned the show.
We have two locations, one in Darien, Connecticut, on Heights Road, right across from the Darien, the Heights Railroad Station, and next to the Noroten Heights Post Office. And our other location is up in Bedford Hills, New York, on Route 117, and that's across from the Splash Car Wash up in Bedford Hills. And come in and mention this radio program, and we'll give you a free five-pound bag of seed. And we do have decals in both locations to prevent window strikes.
Okay, good. Good to know. All right, Joe. Well, it's a pleasure
always,
as always.
A pleasure talking to you guys.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right, thanks, Joe. That was
bye-bye.
Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited. And we're going to take a short break on bird calls and come back with Soundkeeper Terry Backer. He's got lots of interesting things to say, so we'll be right back with more bird calls after these short messages on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out birdcallsradio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. Birdcallsradio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a contact me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out birdcallsradio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Well, I like birds.
Welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody. Got a good show going on so far, talking about how to protect birds. And our guest, Terry Backer, is the Long Island Sound Keeper, and he certainly knows a lot about protecting the environment and things. That's a large part of what he does. So welcome to the show, Terry.
Oh, great to be here, Chris. I was just thinking this morning as I woke up on this beautiful, what I'm calling, still calling, an early spring day. you know, it's just... seems like spring arrived very early here, you know. It's being a little tricky, but woke up to a cacophony of birds singing on my window out on Point No Point, where I live out on the point in Stratford. Couldn't tell you which ones were singing at me, but it was a sweet sound coming in through the windows in the house.
Yeah, so
you know, birds animate our lives so much. You know, even if you're not a birder, I know a lot of the birds, and I wouldn't call myself a full-fledged birder, but I've spent my life working on Long Island Sound as both a oysterman raking oysters and the Long Island Sound Keeper. Now it's my 25th year as the Sound Keeper.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, and part of it through all that was learning so much more about the creatures around me than I even knew before. It's been a great education for me. And I grew up in the West Norwalk, actually, in a time when it was moving over from rural to suburban. And there was, I can tell you now, when I go back to the remnants of the farm where my mom's lived for 85 years, I see a very different assemblage of birds than I remember from being a kid. Fewer of them, and some of them look different to me. But I wish I had been studying then. But, you know, it's great because Long Island Sound, you know, this big piece on the Atlantic Flyway, we get a lot of really dramatic colonial migrating birds and some of the birds that follow along with them. It's really terrific. I watch the egrets come in, both great and snowy egrets, and Great Meadows Marsh by my house, and I'll tell you, it's really great when you see these elegant statues almost standing out there.
Yeah.
We take the kids down there, and they look at these big, tall birds standing there motionless, and then all of a sudden they'll dart down and grab up a little fish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the environment and the maintenance of habitat and water quality come in, because so many of the birds that come up this flyway rely on marshes and water and the fish that are in them for their fuel, for their trek or their destination. You know, a lot of them, their destination is here.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you know Larry Flynn. And Larry takes me out on his boat sometime. And I think my favorite time to go out on Long Island Sound is in the dead of winter.
Oh, yeah. I used to like, a lot of times we used to go out and do the, when I had a boat that was good for that, we used to go out and do the winter bird count, you know, which is a lot of fun. You know, I'd be running the boat, and I'd be there with some ornithologists and some good birders, and I'd learn more about them. But what I find about that is marshes, for a lot of the migratory birds, if you go down to Georgia, a lot of those birds spent their summer here. They worked their way back up. And one of the things I have noticed over the years, and this is a little disturbing to me, and I haven't been able to put my finger on it, but the population of what people would generally call minnows, silver sides, mummy chubs, things of that nature, have been reduced in a lot of the areas that I travel in. You know, I have any number of boats at Soundkeeper that are doing sewage from vessel pump out from places like Fairfield all the way into the Bronx, where we've done some wetland restorations to improve some acreage there into habitat for birds and fish. And it disturbs me somewhat, and I'm trying to get a handle on it, and I'm working with some of the other water groups to see what they're seeing. Right now it's anecdotal by me. I just don't see them there, and that's the food source for all these magnificent birds that are coming up. You know, some of them, of course, will bounce up into the freshwater ponds and lakes. But, these great salt marshes, which we don't have, you know, we've lost many of them. You know, 80% of were here have been filled in, and our houses and cities and towns are sit on them. But, we still have some, and those are tremendously more valuable than they used to be, because as they become the remnant of once a vast vast marsh systems, each acre has more value to the environment, to the cleaning of the waters of Long Island Sound, to the support of all the little fishies that swim in there that, by the way, really dine on mosquito larvae. So they're great devourers of mosquito larvae, so we want a lot of those little fish in the marsh. And, they are also a food source for a whole lot of migratory birds. If you look at the sound and the bird population, it's integral tied to habitat and the other wildlife and marine life that lives there. It's part of this web. You know, everybody talks about the web of life. Well, it's very easy to discern application for that. And, you know, it's also water quality. So water quality might cause a decline in the small fish population, and cause a decline in an increase in the mosquito population, and the less food for the migratory birds that we have coming through. So, you know, it's you can't really separate the world that the birds live in from the world of the a healthy marine environment, or from the world that we interface with. You know, it's like we all need the same things. Clean water, clean air. It's kind of interesting. Someone once told me, all you're interested is in worms and clams. And I said, well, that's because it's not a whole lot of difference between the worms and clams and us.
Yeah, really.
We all need the same, good, clean, non-polluted soils filled with pesticides. And we need good, clean water to drink, and we need air to breathe. And, so we all kind of need the same things. And so in my... when I was working as an oysterman and a lobsterman, my dad, as a young kid, the gulls and so forth, we'd see plenty of. And, you know, as the time went on, you get an interest in the things around you and you started to learn about them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good there's people like you out there protecting our waterways. Now, yeah, I could talk about birds all day, obviously. I have a bird show, after all. But I haven't, even in the introduction, I didn't really describe to our listeners what exactly the Soundkeeper is. Now, I could probably try to mumble through something, but...
this is my 25th year as the official Soundkeeper. I was the second of them, and there was no organization to create keepers then. There were only people who were interested in myself and the Hudson River Keeper, or there were. Today, Chris, as I speak to you, we have grown and mentored the keeper population to where there are 200 autonomous keeper groups in 20 countries on 6 continents, fighting some of the most incredible battles to preserve habitat, water, and wildlife. And as we speak right now, and this may seem far away from us, but in Canada, the bulwark of Canadian Environmental Protection is the Fisheries Act, and the Harper government, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister up there, is weakening that tremendously, and I'm hearing from advocates of wildlife, birds, animals, and fish how detrimental this is going to be for Canada, and it seems to be a push in many quarters to eliminate the protections that we have for wildlife. And like I say, when you're children go out in the harbor, wherever you may live, if it's Greenwich or Norwalk or Stamford, and they're sailing the Little Optimist, they're learning to sail, or they're going to the beach, they need the same clean water that that the animals do. And the fact is, I've spent the majority of my adult life, fighting pollution sources like sewage treatment plants and habitat destruction and the loss of these things that support the populations of animals that animate our lives, that make our lives interesting, and ourselves and our own enjoyment. When you take your kids down to Todd's Point or the beach in Greenwich or Darien or Norwalk, a lot of the areas that we cover the whole Sound, but a lot of the areas near our office, and I see the children in the water, I see them sailing, and I want to have water that's healthy for them.
All right, good. Now, you've been at it for 25 years now, so congratulations on that. But what are some of the major accomplishments that Long Island Soundkeeper organization has been able to do?
Okay, well, there's a whole host of them. Some of them are don't look to be major because they impact one cove or one tributary or something. But if you want to look at what we've been working on, if you look up the Sound and you start, let's say you start in Greenwich, and you move up along the shoreline of the 44 sewage treatment plants that discharge into Long Island Sound. I was the president of the Fishermen's Association back in the early 80s, and we brought pollution lawsuits under the Federal Clean Water Act against many of these communities, Greenwich, Stamford, Norwalk, Stratford, Milford. If you go up along the line now, you will see a new sewage treatment plant in Greenwich at Grass Island as an outcome of a stipulated agreement we had with the city of Greenwich, and they stepped up and started building that new plant. Stamford did a tremendous improvement. Norwalk built a new plant. Westport has a new plant. A new one in Stratford, a new one in Milford. When I say new, within the 10 or 15 years, as the old ones were 40 years old.
Yeah.
And it's improved the quality of our water dramatically in terms of sewage contamination. Now, they still have some problems here and there, but just those things over that period of time was a major improvement to Long Island Sound. We are also working on power plants. As you look at Long Island Sound, it's dotted with power plants. And what most people do not know is that those plants need to be cooled. And they suck billions, literally billions with a B, gallons of water out of Long Island Sound in to cool the plant. In doing so, there's a carnage undertaken, a killing of fish, larvae, fish eggs, juvenile fish, and even larger fish becoming trapped on the screens. And that's called the impingement. And then you have the ones that go through the screen, the fish eggs, the larvae, and that's known as entrainment. And you're looking at billions of marine organisms killed all the time. We have been involved in permit negotiations through the administrative proceedings in, for these plants as they move to get re-permitted every number of years. And we have been moving to get closed cycle cooling, something that works like the radiator in your car. Hmm. You fill it up and there's a heat exchanger and it cools the plant without this continuous flow of water and billions of gallons. We're not getting a lot of headway on that, but we have got a lot of improvement in the way the plants operate. Variable speed pumps, which can slow the water down at certain times when there's a lot of spawning going on. Controlled shutdowns, so when maintenance needs to be done on them, they're done around spawning seasons and so forth. New types of screens, wrist-off rotating screens. So we've managed to improve the permits, and we continue to work towards the most effective, least impactive type of cooling, which is closed-cycle cooling. It's the way the radiator in your car works.
Okay. All right. Well, that's some certainly some big victories for Soundkeeper. Now, you're in a unique position where you're also in the House of Representatives for Connecticut. Do you think you how does that impact your role as Soundkeeper? Do you think you would be as effective without your House role?
I think it's the other way around.
Okay.
I think what has demonstrated itself is the knowledge that I've brought from this nonprofit organization funded by the people who use Long Island Sound to the legislature has been very useful in drafting policies and laws designed to protect use Long Island Sound. There's no interplay, really no interplay between Long Island Soundkeeper and the legislature, mm-hmm. save I am a citizen of the state of Connecticut. I represent a large number of citizens who interact and use Long Island Sound. So to that extent, I'm like any other legislator who wants to protect and improve the sound. Thing is, I do come with a pretty good education on the sound. It's, not only my family, which started oystering off of Greenwich in 1828, had done that all their lives. And so there's that passed on knowledge of the sound from raking oysters and so forth and growing them. And then there's the knowledge that I acquired as my education, and my true education has been being the Long Island Soundkeeper. So I bring to the table quite a bit, and I am pleased to say that many of my colleagues look to me for information on the sound when they're trying to determine how to make up their mind in the use of sound. Here's another victory that people would say, sometimes it doesn't make sense, but a lot of times our challenges are in courts very far from Long Island Sound. One of the big cases that we were involved with to help the waters of Long Island Sound was called the Cotton Council case, the National Cotton Council versus EPA. We were petitioners, environmental petitioners, party to the case. And what the case was designed to do is say that pesticides sprayed in the marine environment, in the marshes and so forth, are considered pollutants under the Clean Water Act, and they need to have a permit in order to be used. So right now, on the basis of that case, which I'm happy to say that the court decided in our favor, the state of Connecticut is writing general permits on how municipalities and others have to treat pesticides in the environment. Pesticides show up as being a problem in a lot of places, and a lot of the ones used over water are there are others that are less impactful, and certainly on the trying to control mosquitoes, we have much, much less toxic pesticides, organic pesticides like Bacillin thuringiensis, which is a bacteria that just infects the mosquito larvae and causes them to die. It's been used for many, many, many years. Is a relatively non-toxic way to treat the water environment. So that was one of our big cases, and that's being followed through right now in Connecticut as a delegated state. It doesn't use the EPA's draft permits that they're developing. It has to develop its own. And, so that's underway. I can tell you that we also played a role in overturning mercury standards set during the President Bush's administration. They were wholly inadequate for the protection, and we were also a case with, involved in that case and overturned those mercury emission standards because the mercury comes from the coal-burning plants in the Ohio Valley, aerosols over to here and contaminates our freshwater lakes. And, you know, and then the birds are eating the fish that have consumed the mercury. You know, we all know about mercury scares and tuna fish and so forth. So that was another great big piece of work done by Soundkeeper and the Waterkeeper Alliance to protect the wildlife in the sound. It protects the human health as well. A lot of things are tied together, you know. You move to protect birds, and you end up having to protect fish, and you end up protecting people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll get into that a little more. We're going to take just a quick break, but we have more time to talk with Soundkeeper Terry Backer. But we're just going to do a few, just a quick break here on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the Wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's KYMRY Group.com, or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak, inviting you to check out BirdCallsRadio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. BirdCallsRadio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a Contact Me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out BirdCallsRadio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Well, I like birds.
Hey, welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody. Remember, if you miss a show, check out birdcallsradio.com. All the archives are there. Lots of great guests and bird talk. So we've got over a year's worth on there now. So check it out. Right now we're with Soundkeeper Terry Backer. Welcome back to the show, Terry.
Oh, okay. Let's roll.
Let's roll. All right. you were talking about the web of life and how everything is related. I think a good example of that is the comeback of the osprey along our shores. You know, back when you started 25 years ago, or at some point, they were probably almost non-existent. And now, in the summer, you can hardly go to a beach or a river leading to the sound without seeing an osprey. So.
Well, you know, I think that it certainly harkens back to the seminal work and the clarion call of Rachel Carson when she wrote Silent Spring. And, you know, when they started to develop certain pesticides like DDT, which were great pesticides, oh, they killed stuff. They were designed to kill stuff. And we've talked about, you know, the web of life. It's not something that we hear a lot anymore in our society, it's a digital society and so forth. But, you know, hey, we still interact with the environment every day. And, with the removal of broad use of some of the chemicals like DDT and stuff, we started seeing the survival of the eggs, of the many birds that were becoming fragile and were breaking due to the use of these chemicals. And, we have seen a repopulation, a some of the most amazing birds, you know, the harriers in the marshes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you look at the Harrier aircraft, there's a reason why it's named a Harrier is when you look at those fish hawks and those marsh hawks, how they can just almost stay in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. They're just amazing, you know, engineering, you know, it's biological engineering, you know, over...
Yeah.
Great spans of time, you know, through the, I happen to be a believer that, you know, and sometimes people say, oh, you know, you guys should treat, you know, the environment like it's a religion, like you worship it. No, I treat the work of the Creator with great reverence. And my role has always been to protect and preserve Long Island Sound, the biological, physical, and chemical integrity of it, for the people who live around it and the animals that live in it.
All right. So, you know, why do you feel it's so important? What do you think it is about you that is, you know, taking on this important role?
Well, you know, I guess called to it. You know, as I said, my family had been, you know, started oystering in 1828 down in Greenwich. If you go through the old records there and you look up some of my ancestors, it'll say occupation, watermen, oystermen in the things there. So we know when they were started and working. And, you know, the sound was our way to make a living. My dad put the shoes on our feet and the food on our table, you know, and, you know, it's life all around you. And, you know, it became infectious, and it was part of me, and it's a part of so many people who live around here. You know, the memories of just going to the beach with mom and dad. You know, a lot of people will say, "Oh yeah, I remember when I used to go and the water was so clean." Well, the fact is, it's better now than sometimes when it was in the 50s and 60s. But what we are finding now, as we peel back the layers, as we solve problems, as we find the problems, we find others. You know, so many of the chemicals that we use in our homes and in our places, or even the medications that pass through our bodies are now starting to show up as problematic in the sound, and a lot of work's being done on different compounds and chemicals known as endocrine disruptors. It's not that people are going to stop taking medicine. We like to see the proper disposal of... unused medication, and there was a bill that passed out of the Environment Committee in Connecticut that would set up, you know, places where you can dispose of these medications, and I think most of them were at the police departments because the DEA has a problem with, you know, prescription medicines and narcotics being not disposed of in a controlled fashion, so this... you know, medicine disposal bills, I think, will be ironed out and worked out a little better, but it'll give people a continuous place where they can get rid of those things, you know, in an appropriate way. Certainly don't flush them down the toilet.
Yeah, so that's not good. Now, you mentioned the oysters. The oyster industry went through some hard times, and now the lobster industry is going through some hard times. What's going on with the... You know, now with the oysters and lobsters.
Well, you know, the oyster guys are doing pretty well. You know, the drop back in oysters was caused by an endemic disease that has been known for a very, very long time, MSX and Dermo, which took a big toll on the Chesapeake Bay's population of oysters, as well as Delaware's Bay's population of oysters. We've had some spates of it here, but one of the things is that our water temperature in the winter and persisted long enough that it wasn't a problem here. And now as we see a slow warming of the sound, who knows what can happen. But I can tell you right now that a number of the oyster companies are still planting and growing oysters and marketing oysters, and they're doing well. The lobsters, we still don't have a handle on it. We don't know what caused their die-off. There's a lot of discussion of pesticides, and, you know, it's kind of one of the things that you can't prove it did and you can't prove it didn't. You know, one of our biggest challenges for Long Island Sound is polluted runoff from our streets and roads. It's something that is pervasive, persistent, and very difficult to get at. But it's something we've worked at here for a long time. You know, we have a couple of things in the lineup. We did develop some filters that they tested. Well, we didn't develop the filters. Mm-hmm. Filters were developed by Abtec Industries in Arizona to absorb oil and kill bacteria, and they work really, really well. But you can't treat infrastructure with them. You can treat polluted water going through them, and then the water goes through these filters in the catch basins and catches all the gunk and junk and unspeakables you see along the road. Yeah. But then the water falls into the underground pipe system, which is a perfect bacteria grower. A lot of animals go in and out of there. They die there. They defecate there. Some stuff gets dumped in there. It's deep underground. It's warm and it's wet, and it produces bacteria. And we are now working and trying to partner with the city of Norwalk. I'd be happy to try and partner with any of the municipalities to find an appropriate place to put what we call a filter vault in, which would be at the end of the system, and treat the bacteria not with any doesn't treat it with any like antimicrobial chemical. It's something embedded in the filter material that doesn't separate and does kill the bacteria. It's a lot of very similar to what they use in operating rooms and operating gowns. And we're looking forward to getting that done. You wouldn't put them everywhere, but if we can put them where we're getting the big slugs of bacteria, where, you know, kids might be, you know, swimming at the beach or taking their sailing lessons, or people might be fishing, coming in contact with the water, that's where we'd like to see these go. And we're working on that as I speak. It's something we're planning to do this summer. You know, it's just like everything else. It's tough times, and we got to do like everybody else. We got to work, find people to donate money to these projects so we can keep our staff and the people we have to bring in to do them. But we think that if we can get this one we're planning on doing as a pilot, and I don't want to call it proof of concept. We know it's going to work. But as a pilot, so municipalities can see how well it works and try to get it into the realm of affordability in those tough spots, I think we'll be able to get at some of the bacterial pollution in certain spots. I think it's a great project for us, and you know, we don't like to see our people fishing off the end of these things, and you know, you see all the birds wading around in this stuff, and you never know what else is coming with it, because whatever you can imagine spills on the street can get into the water, so we want to kind of filter it on its way out.
Okay, now you had mentioned the funding, and of course you have a website, soundkeeper.org. So if anyone wants more information or know how to donate to your great organization, they could do it there.
I guess but one of the things we're doing now, we're just switching over the website and trying to get all the content updated. But it's a newer style website. We're going to like it a lot more than the old one. Yeah, you know, when we always look for community business support, you know, we do some tough stuff. We don't have a real big staff. It's always been my belief that we work with it's kind of like the light infantry, we use a lot of what I call force multipliers. We have a lot of people at the Waterkeeper Alliance, the umbrella organization that I helped build to help take care of the 200 keepers, where they have experts on certain subjects and issues. And we have some great attorneys we've worked with for years who are dedicated to improving the environment at the Pace Environmental Litigation Clinic that was started by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the great attorney there, Carl Copeland, who has been with us and me since for 30 years when we first started bringing the pollution complaints against the cities and towns on their bad sewage treatment plants to get them to fix them. So Carl is now the president of the Waterkeeper Alliance, and he's also the lead attorney and professor at the litigation clinic. So we can get a lot done for relatively cheap, and I have to say relatively because all this work is always expensive, but it's well worth doing.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm great. It's great that you have shows like your show, because bring people into an understanding of how important birds have been in our lives. You know, I remember my father, who, you know, a lifelong oysterman, lobsterman, lineman, he did it all. He used to sit in his window in my mother's house in West Norwalk with a pair of binoculars and Roger Torrey Peterson's book and look with his glasses up into the red maple swamp and tell me about what birds were coming and going and where they were came from and where they might go or if they were staying for the summer.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, it's amazing. I don't think people You know, so many people would be surprised how much they would like learning about birds, you know, if they go out and give it a try.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I'm glad your father's words didn't fall on deaf ears for you. Unfortunately, we only have a little bit of time left, but we started the show at the very beginning with giving tips on how people can protect the birds. Why don't you give just a real quick tip on what people can do to help the sound?
Oh, well, you know, it's always it's a whole lot of things they can do.
Yeah.
I usually try to direct them to a resource. I know on our website, www.soundkeeper.org, a book we did a number of years ago. It's a magazine format. It's called The Sound Book. And you can look at it online, virtually, and you can read it online. It's great for kids. For years, a lot of schools used to order it from us, but it's great for adults. It spans the whole thing, and I think that's one way that people can, you know, educate themselves in a fun way. It won't even take them that long.
All right.
So, you know, to align yourself with a group, there's so many around, you know, there's groups around, and we all have our own niches. Our role is to be, I hate to put it this way, but the enforcer, but we also revel in our role as teacher, too.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for being with us, Terry. And that was Terry Backer, Soundkeeper. And, of course, we'll be check out birdcallsradio.com for archives, and we'll be back next week here on 1490 WGCH.